Over the last few weeks, the actress Veronica Hicks has been bringing us extracts from Yaroslava Sklenichkova's memoirs, If I Had Been a Boy, I Would Have Been Shot. The book tells the moving story of how Yaroslava was sent with the other women from her home village of Ligice to the Ravensbrück concentration camp near Berlin after the Nazis razed the entire village to the ground in June 1942. The men of the village were shot in cold blood, and nearly all the children were gassed in Poland. But throughout their stay in Ravensbrück, the women had no idea of their fate. As the end of the war drew close, Yaroslava, together with her mother and sister, were marched out of the camp together with hundreds of other women. David Vaughan brings the story up to date.
For several days, the women are made to march under guard and with nothing but wooden clogs on their feet. They cover 40 kilometers a day. On the way, they encounter large groups of civilians retreating as the Eastern Front approaches. At one point, they are attacked by an Allied plane that mistakes them for a German convoy. One day, quite suddenly, all the guards disappear and the women realize that they are free. But from now on, they must survive on their own, amid the chaos of the German retreat. Veronica Hicks picks up the story.
We try to find out the latest news about the movement of the front and the general situation in our vicinity. This was not easy. German civilians were afraid to speak to us. We did not dare to show ourselves to soldiers. Prisoners and inmates did not know much more than we did. From the sparse news that we gleaned, we judged in the end that the best thing would be to continue in the direction where all the others were going. Supplies we had more or less assured. In our rucksacks were still a few potatoes. Water we used as it came. When hard up, even from pools covered with chickweed. By the end of April, 63 women slept without any blankets, in the woods or in the ditch by the road, in a foreign country and between two fronts. In a village we were passing, we saw people carrying something from a barn. Curious, we went to have a look. There was a large military warehouse full of thick woolen material. At once, each of us commandeered a piece of material for a blanket so that we would not feel so cold in the night. We asked for night's lodging in a solitary farmhouse, but the owners refused to take in former prisoners. The forest was more kindly. At least the branches of its trees in the evening trapped some of the rain. The night was very disturbed. Explosions and increasingly closer gunfire was heard. Before dawn, Miladka gave the signal to start marching. Mama, Mila and I somehow got delayed, and when day broke, we found out that we were on our own. Nothing could be done. We had to continue according to our own devices. After about 2 hours, we made some breakfast in the yard of a deserted farmhouse. In a shed we discovered some farm tools, and I got an idea. From the wheels of a plough and the base of a discarded pram, I made a cart into which we piled our humble belongings. Toward midday we came to the town of Krivitz, where a military lorry bearing an American flag passed us. We rejoiced that from here on we would get a ride home. Close to us, French prisoners were camping, and my sister learned from them that we must go all the way to the American detention camp in Schwerin. I refused to go another 30 kilometers. Mila started to encourage me. Yashi, listen, just a little bit further. We'll sleep somewhere and, you know what, by dinner time we'll reach the Americans. So in the end she persuaded me, and I forced my aching legs for another, hopefully, a final march. On the way we passed a dumping ground of German weapons. guns thrust into the ground. On them, helmets, discarded bazookas, overturned and burnt-out vehicles. As soon as it started getting dark, we looked for a suitable place to sleep. We liked the nearby forest on the one hand, but on the other, it also gave us a feeling of fear. And just at that moment, a miracle happened. In the ditch beside the road, Milatka was sitting. The joy at being together again was tremendous. Milatka explained to us where the other women were. At the spot where she was sitting and waiting for us, they had met two Polish prisoners, who told them about a camp of Czech prisoners in the wood about half an hour away. The group went with them, while Milatka refused, saying, "I have to wait here for the Suchanek girls." How grateful we were later to Milatka, as it is very likely our lives were saved by doing so. We would have certainly gone on to Schwerin the next day, where a lot of prisoners are said to have lost their lives with a bullet from SS men, who were taking their vengeance before surrendering to the Americans. Apart from those we already knew, we were welcomed in the forest camp by 500 inmates from the Sachsenhausen concentration camp. They treated us with potato pancakes, toasted at the fire, and had built for us temporary tents from conifer branches and canvas. How peacefully we fell asleep to the sound of the lullaby, "Good night, my love, sweet dreams," which one of them played for us on his trumpet. Early next morning, the territory was occupied by the Soviet Red Army. We remained in our camp, and thanks to the radio, a crystal set with earphones, we learned the latest news every day. What is more, we were not short of food. Running freely in the forest were abandoned cattle, and we managed to get hold of potatoes and saucepans in the nearby village. It could be said that we lacked nothing. But among us were those who were old or ill, and after all, it was cold in the forest, and all of us were longing to be back home in Bohemia. We decided to send a delegation to the Americans in Schwerin. Another delegation, led by Antonin Zapotocki, was negotiating with the Russians. The reply from both sides was the same. The railway as well as the bridges are ruined from bombing. We have to wait. The Russians, at least, gave us access to 5 villas in nearby Krivits, and we moved into them. The houses were quite empty, just a bit of furniture and bedsteads without mattresses. We didn't mind that. We slept on the bare floor, and we were glad that it didn't rain on us. After a short time, they moved us to a small manor house in Weitendorf, where, in the course of just 1 week, we managed to eat up full cellars of potatoes. Once again, lorries came for us and took us to Güstrow. Although we were there only a few days, several of us managed to visit the local cinema. I was most interested in the newsreel. It was in Russian and showed the May Day parade in Moscow and the transport of German prisoners of war, including Marshal Paulus, to detention camps in Siberia. After the newsreel followed an American film, Sun Valley Serenade, starring the figure skater Sonia Henie. Though it was in English with Russian subtitles, it was for me an unforgettable experience. The next day we went to Neubrandenburg, to the Soviet repatriation camp, which was housed in the former SS barracks. Those were the only buildings in the town that had not been damaged at all by bombardment, because the Germans had painted a red cross on the roof to make pilots believe that it was a hospital. Because there were a lot of us, not only was a whole house put at our disposal, but also a kitchen with a canteen. At the end of May, a car came to the camp from Bohemia. A son was looking for his father, who had been imprisoned in Sachsenhausen. He found him with us, and in addition to him, he took two more men. One of them was Antonín Zapotocký, who handed a list of our names to the Czechoslovak radio in Prague. It was this way that the steelworks in Kladno learnt about us and sent two buses for us. We were going home.